Welcome to Adoption Talk by Spence Chapin, the podcast where all the voices of the adoption constellation come together. Twice a month, this podcast brings you conversations with adoptees, birth parents, adoptive families, and adoption professionals as they share their experiences and discuss all things adoption. We're glad you've joined us. On today's special episode, we discuss back to school with Spence Chapin therapists Christine Tangle and Amy Silverman. Together, they tackle topics like preparing your child and family for conversations that may come up around adoption, how to speak to teachers and school staff about your family, seeking out a community of support, and so much more. For families of children just starting school, to those with older children, this episode is packed with tips and advice that you won't want to miss. Let's get started. Welcome, everybody. Today we are going to be talking about the long anticipated back to school. My name is Christine Tangle. I am the director of pre and post adoption here at Spence Chapin. And I'm very happy to be joined by Amy Silverman, who is a therapist who relatively recently joined our team here at Spence Chapin again. Amy, thanks for being here with me. Can you tell folks who you are?
Hi, Christine. Thank you so much. Very excited to be here. I am a social worker who has been working for many, many years. I don't want to say how many, but almost 15 of those years, I've worked in adoption through Spence Chapin. Took a brief hiatus to do some other things, but I'm really happy to be back at Spence Chapin in the role of therapist. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Wonderful. We are happy to have you. And I am happy to be thinking about the back to school season. What is back to school in general sort of bring up for you?
I mean, I think about, my own family and the excitement of going back to school and the nerves at the same time. So it's that combo, that feeling of nervous excitement that sometimes comes. You know, it's a new year, new school, new teacher, potentially, potentially new children for the, for our kids to meet. And at the same time, you know, that brings with it a lot of possibility for renewal and for starting over. And also, some of that anxiety around, what's it going to be and how am I going to feel when I get there from the kid perspective and moms and dads.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So it is, it's funny that it's so easy for us because I feel the same way. About that this is like a new year, right? Everybody, there is this newness to this time of year and anticipating what school is going to be. And I think too, part of why I think that this is an important topic for us to talk about is it is also the time where, whether it is again or for the first time, your kid is going out into the world by themselves, right? They are representing themselves without you there, and introducing themselves to new people. As our children are growing up, they're developing sort of different styles about who they are, and they're bringing that with them to school. And so, it's in terms of our talk today and sort of the intersection, right, of what it means to be an adoptee going to school and what sort of unique things come up there. But really also, the general idea is that there goes your kid off into the world to practice for when they'll be doing that permanently as an adult. And then, I think what's tricky or what I want to put out there right away is that this isn't, our intention here is not to set adoptees apart or adoptive families apart from everybody who goes back to school this time of year, right? It is not to pathologize or set apart, but really to give, I think, hopefully a framework of things that could be improved, particularly for people who may have had negative experiences in the past with a teacher or with a, you know, back to school experience. And also the opportunity to be proactive, right? That if maybe things, you know, by starting afresh and thinking about these things at the beginning, maybe it would even prevent some difficulties. And at the same time, although I would love if you and I could talk about every single possibility, we also kind of have to draw out themes, right? So they may not apply to every single experience or every child. You know, we're not saying, of course, that everybody is going to have every single experience that we've talked about. But I think this is a good one.
For sure. Yeah.
All right. So where do we start then? Mm. We are getting ready back to school. Those commercials are on TV. The stores are stocked. Backpacks.
Maybe we should start kind of at the beginning. New schools, particularly for our youngest kids who haven't started school before, this, you know, going into kindergarten, or maybe they've been in preschool, you know, where they're in a play environment, but now school is serious. So, you know, helping your child navigate, you know, friendships, dealing with possible things that could come up as adopted children, and also helping the teachers, the principals, the school personnel really understand, you know, just making sure that they understand some of the nuances of adoption to prevent some of, you know, the challenges that we've seen come up.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. Right. So this idea of it's brand new. It's the most brand new it can be. It's school for the first time for your family, and for your particular child. And what do you do, to make that sort of the easiest experience, right? Or how do you sort of, lay a foundation for your child? And I think one of the questions, that starts that off is the, do I, don't I? How much information do I give the school ahead of time? And how much do I keep our family story or my child's story private and see what happens? Mm-hmm. And what say you to that, Amy?
You know, what comes to mind actually right away is the story of a friend of mine who is a much older woman. So her daughter is grown. But when she was little and starting a new school, this was an interracial adoption. So it was a visible adoption. The school, anybody could clearly see that her daughter did not look like her. So someone in the school said something about adoption to her that really upset my friend. Mm. She really felt like it was none of their business, and that they were setting her daughter apart, and why should it matter? And so I think we should talk a little bit about, you know, just being prepared for hearing some of those things and having something so you're not taken aback when those things come up.
Yeah. 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 Right. And I think, you know, if I won't, in some ways, what I want to lay over this part of the conversation is what kids are doing developmentally, so to speak, at this age, right? So oftentimes kids at this age will talk freely, share things that maybe adults think are private or for discussions with not strangers, right? And kids tend to have no filter at this age, which is part of what I love about them. And so, you know, again, every child is different, but often kids at this age are really, they just sort of take in their birth and adoption story from what their parents have told them, and will, you know, say it right back out, right? So one of the things I think is important for parents is to expect that your child will, they will have sort of the toolbox of whatever you've given them at this age. So the, how you have talked to them so far about their story is how I would, you can sort of anticipate that they will talk about it at school. Mm-hmm. And so I think some of what might be helpful for a kid at this age who's new to a school environment is the people who will be around them, the adults that are there to support them, should potentially have some context for what you imagine your child is going to go into school and talk about. And I think some of the examples I have heard from people are things like, often they'll do a theme on this is me, right? Like, and so they talk about themselves, they talk about their family, they might draw pictures or start writing things. And a child who may go in and say, right, I have a birth mother and I have my mom. And someone might say, a kid might say, right, you can only have one parent, right? You know, that doesn't work. Or, mm-hmm. you know, I have, someone might say, like, I have siblings I don't live with, right? Well, then they're not your siblings, right? Some, that sort of language may come up. And so if you are helping to prepare the teacher in a way that this is the way your child will be talking about something, I think that that can be helpful.
Sure, because if a teacher overhears this conversation, she can then, be armed to come in to the conversation and help the other child to understand. So it's not the burden for your child to have to educate or to defend herself with her mm-hmm. story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I guess I would hope, right, that particularly where we are here in New York City, that schools have a better foundation, that there is so much diversity in families and families can look different ways, right? Their skin tone may not be the same. Their cultural background may not be the same. There are people who have single heads of households. You know, there are families with two dads, two moms, and
blended families,
a range of so many things. But I also know that that's not true. Certainly, even in my experiences with my kids, sometimes teachers often make assumptions that there's a mom and a dad, right? That I think we still hear that a lot.
Yep.
So having some sort of conversation, and by this, I mean, it could be an email, right? And so happy to have you as my child's teacher this year. We're looking forward to becoming part of the school. Wanted to give you a little bit of information about who our family is. And that, of course, can be, a parent can choose at that point how much detail is appropriate for that conversation. But perhaps just a little framing could be helpful for your child as they're a student in that class, right? And that's really the point. So if we're looking at it from the kid's perspective, then we are hoping that we're making the best decisions, for what's going to be best for them. Mm-hmm. And, I think that can also extend to maybe having a conversation with the principal or the head of school if you've had some sort of relationship or it seems like the kind of environment where we're having a conversation like that will be helpful. I know that part of my background, just in terms of this topic in general, is that there have been some schools who have actually asked us to go out and do trainings on sort of adoption in schools themes. And I mean, that's perfect, right? So, yeah. So then, mm-hmm. all of the teaching staff are getting educated on that. And so I think there are some schools that really prepare for this and are thinking about it. And then there's others who potentially need a little bit of help.
I was just going to say, it's nice to know that that's available, that if the school is interested, that Spence would absolutely love to come out and provide that training.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about, right? So that's in some ways what we've just said about a new school, new kid to school. That is just, I guess, a general point, right? Why don't we talk a little bit about some of sort of the particular themes that we have heard about in terms of what might come up for kids?
Sure. One of the things that's just on my mind, because I've heard it so many times, including, you know, my, you know, friends of mine who've gone through this, is a situation where children come home feeling very hurt because someone in the school had said, you know, why don't you look like your parents? You know, how come your parents are white and you're not white?
And I think, right, would I certainly, I think that's a good one, right? So there's some sort of difference or question that comes up. And, you know, the interesting thing is, you may have experienced this too. So in therapy work that I do with kids, sometimes you hear about it from the child themselves, and they haven't told their parent about it, right? And so so sometimes it's a thing that that a child themselves sort of feels like they are carrying around or have to figure out by themselves. And so I think one of the pieces for parents to know is, even if your child hasn't talked about it, it doesn't mean that that situation hasn't happened and they're not trying to figure it out for themselves. So, right. So what is something a parent can do when their child comes home and says there was this situation and maybe they're able to say, I didn't know how to answer it, or maybe they just sort of come at it with a feeling, right? So and so said something to me and I felt really sad about it. And to that, I think part of the preparation, right, is making sure not only is your kid being sent off with their backpack full of school supplies, so to speak, but that they're sort of have their tools about how they talk about themselves and their family, so that they can feel as prepared as possible to know what they say and choose not to say, right? So I feel like here's where I'm gonna mention the Wise Up curriculum, which I know we talk about all the time. This is something that the organization CASE created, and it is an actual workbook for kids, but it talks about different ways to respond. And one of those is actually sort of to not respond.
Yeah.
You don't have to answer it. You could walk away. That's right. The W. So I think it's important, you know, that kids know that that's an option. If they don't want to answer a question, or if they feel perhaps that somebody is saying it to intentionally be mean to them. Sometimes kids prefer to share something about their own story, maybe. And I think that that situation that you brought up is the reason, you know, my parents and I are of a different race is because I joined the family through adoption, right? And so you're sharing something, you're explaining, you know, you're sort of answering the question. And for some kids that might make sense. And maybe that's all that other person needs. You know, I think it's what's tricky, right? Is there's this, there's these two things. There's one sort of this maybe visible difference that some kids experience. And then there's that other piece, which it could be used as a way to be mean or to bully or make fun of a kid too. And you don't always know exactly, you know, which way that's coming from, or you have to prepare your kid for either way.
Right. And sometimes your child may make an assumption, or you may make an assumption, that this is about bullying. And it's really just about ignorance. It's a child that needs more information. And once they have that information, they move on with their day.
Right. I often talk about, you know, because some of these, I think, particularly for grownups, right, can feel like big or heavier topics to try to sort out. Kids, on the other hand, sort of tend to take things at face value, both, you know, one's own child, but also, you know, children, children at large. Right. And so sometimes it is once they understand something or it's said in a way that makes sense to them, they really just sort of carry on and move on to the next thing. But okay. So that one idea of this, right, is preparing your child for how they're going to introduce themselves, how they might say something about adoption, what language they might use, if that's something they need. And again, not every single child, you know, goes into school and gets asked questions. They may, depending on how familiar the family is with the community of the school, some of this might come up and some of it might not, because if you have older children who have already been through the school, you have a lot of people, let's say from your daycare or from your community who go to this school, maybe you're sort of a well-known family in the school and this stuff doesn't come up. Okay. Let's talk about then some of the other themes that come up in terms of what your child might need, right? Mm. So there is addressing sort of differences, addressing people being mean. And then there is the thing that we're all there to do at school usually, right? Which is learn. Mm-hmm. And so I think another area that's important to talk about is this idea of learning differences, learning challenges that might come up. And maybe for this part of the discussion, I want to sort of open up, right, that depending on the age at which your child was when they joined your family, what their educational experience was up until then, and what their learning style is, right? They may have particular needs. So let's talk about that for a while.
Okay. Well, you know, I have become aware through a lot of the families that I work with that there are many different kinds of learning challenges that our children may have. And not every teacher, not every school, you know, not every classroom is necessarily equipped to be the best teacher or the best environment for that particular child's learning needs. And I've worked with a number of folks now who have really been very strong advocates for their kids in, first of all, pinpointing what are the particular learning needs of that child through evaluation in the schools and sometimes even outside evaluators, and then locating the right program. And it's not always easy. Sometimes it takes several tries, which can be challenging. So maybe we can talk a little more about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really good point that you may, right, also be introducing what your child needs at the beginning of this school year, because maybe their IEP has been updated or there were services over the course of, you know, the last year that you found really beneficial and you want to make sure they're in place. Mm-hmm. And here's where I sort of put my educational advocacy hat on. We could do a whole podcast about this, I imagine, but how important it is to understand what your child's rights are and what the expectations should be about the kind of environment they're going into. Particularly, I would say, in this case, when they're going into a public school environment, mm-hmm. that they there can sometimes be challenges with a new school year and getting services started. Sometimes it doesn't happen right away, or the staff aren't in place or ready to be able to provide those services right away. And I do think it's important for parents, obviously, to work with the school, but also to understand again what their child is entitled to in terms of what they need to learn. So checking in early about did those the sessions for speech start yet? Did the school social work counseling sessions start yet. How is that going? How many times a week? What time of day? So that if you notice challenges that weren't there before, or, you know, a return maybe to some things you thought you had gotten beyond in the last year or so, that you can maybe sort of be a little bit of an investigator, right? Why that might happen, or what gets in the way.
And, you know, on that note of being a good advocate for your child, one of the things I think it's really important is to be a real team player with the school and with your child's teacher. Advocacy is so hard because you don't want the teachers necessarily to think that you are fighting against them. They have a lot of knowledge and information that they can share with you, and they can be on your child's side supporting your child. But if they see you as someone who is just there to make life difficult for them, that does not help your child. So it's about coming to your child's teacher in a spirit of collaboration, of just wanting the best. You know that your child's teacher wants the best for your child, and you also want the best for your child. And how can we work together to make sure that this happens? You know, I've heard some stories, and most of the time this doesn't happen, but we don't want a situation where the child's teacher then becomes and feels antagonized and becomes more, you know, not necessarily a bully towards the child, but just not wanting to deal with that particular parent, that parent as, you know, as a somebody who is getting in their way or causing difficulty. So this is about being a team and working together.
Yeah. And it's quite a balance, right? And I think the beginning of the school year is always, there is a hopefulness, but for some parents who have been through this for the long haul, you're already exhausted, right? Yeah. Another school year is like, oh, here we go again. Like, what, you know, can we make this happen? I often like to recommend to parents that, finding somebody in the school who will be as fierce an advocate for your child. And that would be great if that's always the head teacher in their classroom, but it could be one of their service providers, the parent coordinator, somebody on the leadership team at the school who really knows, you know, you get to know and likes your kid and really wants, is sort of looking out for them. And so for families where it might be the case where back to school means a little bit of worry about your child's educational needs, see who that person could be potentially for your kid.
Could be also school social worker or the guidance counselor that, you know, that team is there specifically for this purpose.
Absolutely. And with that too, I always know, so for kids who come to Spence Chapin for therapy, I always like to talk to the team at the school, and often that contact person is the guidance counselor or the school social worker. So if you also have private services in place, make sure that the lines of communication are open between the school staff and those private services so they can work together. And, you know, in some ways, and I guess I'm just thinking about the last conversation I had with a school school staff, and what came up was the topic of transitions and how difficult transitions can sometimes be. And I would say particularly for kids who join their family through adoption, and maybe even more particularly for kids who have come from a difficult start to begin with, that the coming into school or coming into a new routine can be a place where it gets tricky.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, for some of our kids who struggle with learning issues, they may have had to have several transitions to find the right classroom, to find the right school for them. I've been working with a few families where they've had three or four schools within the last few years for, you know, a variety of reasons, but each, you know, each transition for that child is going to be a new challenge, new routines, new kids to get to know. It can really trigger a lot of this stuff. And then especially for those who came to their families after a number of transitions in their previous life. So if they've been in foster care and have had several moves, or if they were in an orphanage or children's home and then had to move, you know, to a new country, a new culture, a new language, all of those things, you know, made transitions difficult for them.
Yeah, that's a great point. Mm-hmm. I think that's also, it's important for me actually to even say at this point that although a new school year in my perspective, in my personal perspective, is usually an exciting, fun time. And as a parent, one might also be going into it thinking like, the school year, it's great. This is exciting. Mm-hmm. That we have to leave room for each child's unique experience, right? Which might be the idea of getting used to something new when I have transitioned from three different schools already, when maybe I have difficulty making friendships with kids at the in class, that feels like an overwhelming prospect to come into the new school year. And so if you are a parent who your child, you know, starts displaying maybe some behavior, acting out behavior that they don't usually do, they start having trouble sleeping maybe at the beginning of the school year, they become more clingy to their parent or parents, you might wonder about, is there something else going on? Is this situation reminding my child of another potentially challenging time? And what do they need to get through that?
And as a parent, if you remind yourself of how hard these transitions have been for your child, it can automatically generate a whole lot of compassion. And coming to your child with that that sense of empathy towards what they've already been through in their short life can really provide that child with the needed support of just knowing that you're there, that you understand how they feel, and that they can come to you and tell you anything, or just get those hugs and all of that love and nurture that they need to kind of get them through the tough times.
Yeah. Yeah. And what comes to my mind, why don't we talk a little bit about older kids? Because I think our minds so far have been on younger kids sort of starting school, but all of this applies. I don't care if you're getting ready to send your kids to college, right? Like there are themes that go through here.
We hope you're enjoying this episode of Adoption Talk. There are more tips to come as Christine and Amy touch on the effects of COVID on families and how transitions may affect older children. But we wanted to pause to let you know that Spence Chapin is offering a wide range of community programs this school year to support adoptees of all ages and their families. We're running a special through the month of August, so head to our website now to learn more. Spence-Chapin.org/community. Now let's get back to the episode.
Wanting to acknowledge things like transitions, if you are an older child, may still be very difficult and may be harder to feel comfortable talking about with your parents. It may be harder at that point to go to your parent and say, I need a little extra love right now. This is rough.
Right. Or,
you know, teenagers not often good at being able to say that to their parents. So, and let's talk about older kids, and let's link this a little bit to something we have not talked about yet, which is COVID and how COVID has impacted mm-hmm. every single child's experience of school.
That is exactly what I was thinking about right now, because I think it's universal, not just the people who've been coming to me and talking to me about it, but every child, at least, you know, in New York City and probably in the United States, has been through some portion of their educational experience having to be educated from home through remote learning, which has been a challenge for all of them. The separation from their peers has been a huge challenge for all of them. Just for younger kids, even having to do this through a computer is not their natural way of learning. But for kids of all ages, it's been a strain. And for some with learning differences, it has not been helpful. For others, it may have been a great thing because there are certain kids with learning differences where focusing on a computer screen and blotting everything else out has actually helped them. But for a lot of kids, it just didn't work out. And a number of the parents I talked to tried the remote learning. It did not work. Then they searched for a different school where they could have more in-person learning. But again, though, then there were multiple school situations when things didn't work out. And what I'm also hearing is that coming back to school after a year or so of remote or hybrid learning has had its other challenges of now the kids are all in person. All that missing social life is now, hooray, I'm back with my peers. That's great. And that's all they want to do is socialize. On the flip side, some of the bullying, because these kids have kind of forgotten some of their social skills. So for some kids, bullying has been more intense than it might have been in years past. So all of these challenges are coming up. And then with a teenager, yeah, they're not going to always tell you. Sometimes they're going to just go to their room and slam the door and you don't know why they're being so rude, or they're just moody, or even, you know, I've seen some kids that have had some regressions where they might behave more like a younger child would, and it's confusing for parents. So be aware when there's behavioral challenges that it might be related to something emotional that's going on in school or just the challenge of dealing with these transitions that they're not talking about because they're older kids.
Yeah, yeah. I do think it's important this year, right, that yes, most kids had a decent amount of in-person school last year, mm-hmm. but for our teens who we have seen experience anxiety and depression at just horrendous rates since COVID, that is not done. So if you have a child who really struggled during COVID in the transition, the initial transition back, the idea that going back to school at this point may perk some of that stuff up, again, even if it has gotten a little better, wouldn't necessarily be a surprise. And in that way, I think, you know, the things that you're going to do if your kid is willing to talk to you about them, right, is to be able to have conversations about some of this stuff, put some of those good supports in place for your child as the school year is starting. You know, maybe thinking about what that initial month or two is going to look like. Not do a lot of outside changes at the same time as the school transition is happening, and then getting the supports in place, right? So I know one thing at Spence Chapin that we're often doing is some of the kids we see for therapy, they've been on vacation and they've gone to camp and they've missed some weeks of therapy, and then come the end of August and beginning of September, it's time for everybody to come back and get into their regular routine of getting the mental health support that they need.
Right.
And so I think that's one piece. It's also a time, right, where you may be reminded that having an adoption community is really important, or you've been busy for the summer and now it's time to come back and interact and sort of be a part of families who are like you, kids being around other adoptees. I know that we see is usually very beneficial for them to have a space where a lot of those questions that we started at the beginning of our talk, you know, thinking about don't happen in those adoptee or adoptee only spaces.
For sure. I love the fact and always share with all the families I'm working with the fact that we have kind of a seamless suite of community programs from the youngest kids with Bagels and Blocks through Play Cafe and then mentorship of various ages, preteens and teens, and the mentors themselves being adoptees is such a wonderful thing for a lot of teenagers who really don't always have role models who've gone through exactly what they're going through. So I love that and recommend it to anybody. And then for parents too, when you're bringing your kids to these programs, you get an opportunity to talk to other parents who really know what you're going through. So that's also a great opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. I think some of my excitement for sure in this back to school season is that our programming does run on the school year as well. And so being able to have in-person play groups and that sort of thing, again, something we have not done in the past few years is really, it's exciting. So I'm happy to be doing that. And I hope that people, find certainly come to Spence Chapin for the support, but find that additional, extra support as everything is sort of returning to the school year and the routines of everything that's happening. So maybe we should end with sort of maybe talking, giving sort of a one last thought or tip about return to school. I would say, I think maybe one of the things to remember about this time, as we have focused this whole conversation really on the needs of kids, is remembering that that parents are people too. Right. And so if I can speak as a parent myself, that that it also, as you are looking to make sure your child is situated and in a good place, being an advocate as needed, finding the supports that your child needs, that it is a moment for you to reflect on getting your needs met, maybe getting into some of the routines that help you make it through the whole school year. The summer can often be a little, though it's often filled with fun and things to do and plans, that it may be not a time that's, restful or where you're able to sort of recharge again. And so back to school may be the time as a parent where you do get freed up to have a little bit of an opportunity to take care of yourself. That would be a hope.
That's, that is great. I'm glad you raised that. And I do want to say that if you don't have a really good support system in place, if you're not really focused on your own self-care, start to go out and look for that. Build up a community because that's going to be a place where you can get recharged. And it's okay to take a moment and to focus on yourself.
Absolutely. Well, I feel like perhaps that is a good place for us to end our talk for today. Amy, I really appreciate you taking the time to have this chat with me and to get excited about back to school. Mm-hmm.
It's my pleasure. I really enjoyed it. It's great talking with you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Adoption Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating wherever you get your podcasts. You can also head to spence-chapin.org/adoptiontalk to leave feedback, suggest episode topics, and sign up for updates on the latest episodes. See you next time.